all that stuff. Because I talked about how Jamie was gone.
No, I'm not keeping that stuff in.
But everyone's going to hear us talking now.
It's filled with squeaks and dog barks. And I'm telling you, someone listens to 4 hours of podcasts a day. You do not want to hear that shit in the background.
I think that people are going to be like, call in. Call in now. And let us know.
Yeah, call
do
in.
Do you want to hear the rubbish before we started recording, which was Jimmy playing with a squeaky ball? I think people are interested because it's real life. It's real. It's powerful. It's today.
Call 1-800 Damien won't listen and we'll
Take
those
so I
calls
was just,
on board.
I was just talking about how Jamie is gone with a new family now.
I'm just talking about how Jamie went away.
She's with a new family now.
What song are you singing?
The next line of that song.
Yeah, which is?
My name is John Lennon from the Beatles.
That was My Name is John Lennon from the Beatles.
Yeah.
By John Lennon.
Yeah. Jamie, Poppy, I miss your stinky farts.
Imagine if song lyrics were that literal, like...
In the hallway every night.
That was It's Me, Paul McCartney, I'm Married to Linda by Paul McCartney.
Right, so they picked her up this morning and they were a really beautiful family and I was fine when they left and I just couldn't stop
crying. Who's Jamie? Should we tell people that Jamie's a dog in case this is the first time
The
podcast?
Okay, if it's the first time you're listening, the last few weeks, Jamie is...
Previously on Should We Just Watch It Real Quick.
We had a foster dog here called Jamie and she'd been in with us for a few weeks and she left this morning to a new family because she was ready to go. And they were beautiful and she vomited in the car on the way back to theirs. But she messaged me a few photos of her playing on her bed with a rope and she's like, she's not sure about us, but she'll get there. And I'm like, great. You know, it's great. It's great. You foster, this is what happens. You foster dogs, you make them strong, you fix them up and then you find the perfect family for them. But, you know, I get sad when they leave. I cry because there's a part of my brain that says, I just hope the dog knows that I didn't throw them away and I didn't give them away. They were only ever supposed to be here for a small amount of time for me to build them up until they found their forever home. But I just hope that dogs know that. And I feel like after a few weeks, she'll understand.
You know, it's always the same thing. Prior to that, we had a foster's dog, which was a dog that just cracked tins all day. And when we said goodbye to him, it was tough as well.
You know, sometimes I just want to – this is something that Damien has said to me this week. Sometimes I just want to have a proper conversation and you ruin it with jokes. That is something I want to – on the record, Your Honor, that is something Damien said to me this week.
Yeah, about our real life, not the comedy podcast that we do.
Righto,
sport. Another Fosters.
Right, we're wrapping up around 20 past five.
Is that the end of dog chat? So Jamie's gone. It was very nice to have her here.
Jamie's gone.
That was Jamie's Gone by Jamie Durham and the Hot Dudes.
She was so sweet. She was a real sweet puppy girl.
Pain in the ass.
She was little. She was a little cattle dog. She was a little blue heel, a bit of kelpie. So I was a little cattle dog. I just want to go on the back of your ute. I'm going to check out, you know, a few shits. You know, get some sheep, round them up, bark at them, and then piss on the carpet. Bob's your uncle. I'm a farm dog. That's me. My name's Jamie.
I'm a farm dog, and I like to shit right on your bedroom floor.
I shit on your bedroom carpet, yeah. Then I'm gonna do a poo. You're gonna walk it.
Walk it?
You're gonna walk in it.
And then just walk that poo. Walk that poo all through the house.
Poor Damien stepped in a poo this week.
Believe it or not, I'm walking on poo.
This must be annoying for people. This must be annoying
for
people.
This is like Solo Bolo Comedy Bang Bang episode where Scott and what's his face? Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious.
Oh, Jenny Slate. Jenny
Slate. The boy. The boy, Jenny Slate.
Ben Rosenthal.
Ben Schwartz. Ben Rosenthal.
Right. Don't be suspicious. Nah. Money, please. What a great character they are in Parks and Rec.
What a great character they are.
What is it? John? Is it John Ralphio?
John Ralphio or something.
Mate,
like that, yeah.
My sister's a bitch. Like, oh, man. Everything sang, money, please. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Dude, what a great character. Anyway, right. We're going from tit to tit here.
Wow, what a great character.
Yeah.
This is Should We Just Sigh About It Real Quick. I am your host, Dr. Damien Gibson. I didn't go to exasperation school to be called happy. Thank you very much. And in the blue corner, it is the Italian gelding. It's Kelly Big Whoop. Want to fight about it? I will fuck you up, son. For Stuka.
Yeah, that's me, dickhead.
What have you been watching this week, Stukes, that wasn't something that we watched together?
Fuck, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? You've had a week to prepare for this.
Oh, I've been watching Hell's Kitchen. Yes.
Quickly,
quick as you can.
Quick as All you right. can, please.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Shit.
Shit. This is absolute shit. What are you? What are you? Shit sandwich. What are you? Yep. Okay. Quick as you can. Thank you very much. It's not bad. It's old seasons. On
Get your
binge.
Fucking head in the game.
Why? But I don't mind it because, like, the one thing I do like about
I don't mind it.
Shopping trolley murdered, groceries just gone. That is a quote.
Yeah, it's a deep cut. It's a deep Australian cut.
This is Australia. Listen, I'm telling you right now, this is an ADD version of this podcast. You are very annoying. I'm going to get feedback from people saying it's hard to listen when it's crazy like this. So you need to calm your fucking farm and stop trying to quip on every fucking thing that's been said. Because people will hate it. It's going to be annoying.
Yeah, I am very quick though.
Yeah, but quick and funny are different things. Anyway, I like reality shows where people actually have talent. So if it's a drag race where they're talented or Hell's Kitchen, they can fucking cook.
That's a good parameter. That's a good. I feel like that's a good parameter for reality
TV. You can't
TV.
Just wait it out, like Big Brother.
Like a contest of some description. Like it has to, I mean, not a contest is the wrong word. But yeah, like a, I suppose a talent show.
Like that's why Bake Offs are good because they make, you know, is it cake? You have to be talented. You can't swing by on your fucking charm.
Hmm.
Like you got to be, and there's heaps of them. Like there's like Tattoo Show, the glass show where people make glass things.
Like Mae Martin did in Season 15 of Taskmaster.
No, I don't remember what you do.
No.
All right, good one. I'm not yes-anding that. I'm not.
You don't yes-and anything, so.
Well, I have to. I yes-and comedy, so go for it, Brofus. Go for it, dickhead. Nah, it's all right. Listen, I love you. Mm-hmm. Listen.
Mm-hmm.
I watched that, and I'm watching a lot of your Law & Order. And I even started watching a little bit of Criminal Intent.
Blank, blank.
Blank, 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 blank.
What's Criminal Intent? What's that?
So Criminal Intent is the one that has the kingpin on it.
Ah, D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio.
I love him, man.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
He is so fucking good.
So he's in – Criminal Intent is more about crimes that happened – and they are like two detectives on the case and it's more about finding out the whys. Like, okay, there was a crime. Why did it happen? Whereas normal Law & Order is there is a crime and the cops find them and then the order happens within, you know, so they get what happens. They go to jail, blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
The Special Victims Unit is always something to do about a special victim where, you know, a woman – enters her home that she feels safe in and someone kills and rapes her. But some of the Special Victims Unit, it's like there is a lot of like sexual assault cases, but it's funny because sometimes it starts that way and it ends in another way, which I find like I think I was saying last week where it's like, oh, it starts because like a jogger got attacked, but then it ends up being a counterfeiting case.
Hmm.
And which is interesting. And it's the one with Ice-T in it. I like it. Anyway, and then Criminal Intent, I've watched a few episodes and it's not bad. And my mum actually was like, oh, you should watch Criminal Intent. It's kind of good.
It's a Lena recommendation.
It's a Lena recommendation. It's not that I have all this time ahead. It's just that, what? Shut up.
You should watch Criminal Intent.
After you rewatch the Geelong Grand Final 1989, then watch Criminal Intent, Law and Order. Okay, good. Done and dusted. Shut up. Get out of my house. Close the door. What are my recommendations?
I've been watching a lot of the 2007 AFL Premiership Grand Final.
Yeah. I watched the 1989 because they lost. I turned it off 5 minutes before the end because I don't like watching when they lose. That's a real thing. My mum rewatches old Geelong Grand Finals, mm-hmm. and then if they've lost it,
She turns it off just before the end of the match.
So she doesn't have to watch them lose. But yeah. So it's not that I have a copious amount of time on my hands. It's more the fact that I just, while I do my stupid day job, I just have TV on in the background. So stuff like Law and Order is kind of good because I don't get particularly enthralled in it, you know. And same with Hell's Kitchen. Like I'm kind of watching it in the background. But, yeah, it's not bad. I like those reality shows where people have to have something. They've got to be good at something, you know.
This filament is not cooked all the way through.
What did you do? Go kill the cow? Do it again.
Get this out of my fucking sight.
You're a sack of shit.
So harsh.
There was one where...
It's so harsh.
Well, that's what it's like in the kitchen. But also there was a guy who was actually Jonathan, in the one that I'm watching, and he's been killing it. He's like 5'2", and he's really, really great. And you can tell that. You can tell already that Gordon loves him, and Gordon's like, this kid is just phenomenal. Like, he's so good. And they were celebrating one night. He got on the piss, and then he had a massive hangover the next day, and he could not get things right. Like, and Gordon like pulled him up on it and was like, have fun, have a fucking wine, but if you can't fucking take it, I would not be fucking drinking, you sack of shit. And then later, the kid was safe, but he pulled him up afterwards and went, listen, I want to talk to you about today. And he was like, I felt like you had an attitude all day. And he's like, yeah, I did, because you called me a sack of shit in the morning. And he goes, I cannot let it go. I respect you. I look up to you. If you speak to me like that, it actually hurts my feelings. And he goes, listen, it's kitchen and it's banter. You need to toughen up. You need to toughen up and get over it, okay? Right? I knew you'd hate it. I knew you would.
Absolutely gross.
And he was like, you need to toughen up.
Okay, I'll toughen up. Let's go outside and we'll have a real tough chat about it.
I told you.
Big boy?
No, this guy is like 5'1".
So what?
But also on the other end.
Gordon Ramsay's all bluff, man.
On the other end, I will say.
What a cock snap.
On the other end, I will say that there has been times where you've had real pieces of garbage. But it was, I'm paraphrasing, like. Gordon was a bit like, okay, I get it. Goes, but you were fucking up. And you were walking around like a sack of shit. Like you were not, your head wasn't there, blah, blah, blah. You were screwing up. You know what I mean? Like they had it, anyway, whatever. But on the other end, there has been actual pieces of garbage been in there. Like Tony from Boston. And no one ever tells him that his ravioli's shit. And Gordon's like, you are not welcome in this kitchen. You need to leave because you can't speak to people like that. And the guy's like, you want to fucking take it outside? And Gordon, like, really, like, nose to nose up to him, he goes, yeah, you want to do that, do you? Is that how you want to do this, big boy? Is it, sweetheart? Is that how you want to do it? Like, because sometimes, like, there's assholes in there. And I actually really like the way Gordon, like, goes, really, really, and, like, does – you know what I mean? Like, there's people around who obviously
like
would
true psychopath.
Well, that's the thing. He's like, really goes, but it's also fun because it's the way that Gordon.
Yeah, I
goes,
understand that. Like,
really, you want to have a fight?
You're seeing the smart ass be taken down, but I just I hate all of that.
Yeah,
I hate that. Like that, it's just fake. Machismo, it's just bullshit. Because anyway, in real life, he would get the shit kicked out of him.
What have you been
watching? But I always preferred. I was just gonna say, I always preferred Kitchen Nightmares. To Hell's Kitchen, because in every episode of Kitchen Nightmares, well, one or two things would happened. Gordon would go to a struggling restaurant and they would be so desperate for his help that he would help them and they would succeed, which were great. I love those episodes.
Mm.
Or there would be some obstinate shit like that, that like after 5 minutes you'd be like, get him, Gordon.
Yeah.
And then he'd, you know, and then he'd really like nail their balls to the wall. I don't like Kitchen Nightmares as much because I feel like all of those people do look up to him and stuff. And so like when he is being like,
no, so aggressive, so Hell's Kitchen and to, like, is the one with the contestants.
Yeah, I'm saying Kitchen. Yeah.
You said
Kitchen Nightmares. I'm saying I like Kitchen Nightmares.
Oh, you just said Kitchen Nightmares because people look up to him.
Well, I meant Hell's Kitchen. Right. I like Kitchen Nightmares. In Hell's Kitchen, everything's called the same fucking thing.
I know.
In Hell's Kitchen,
they look up to him.
Yeah, and he like talks down to them and stuff, and he knows he can get away with it because barely anyone's going to stand up to him.
But he also says and nice things.
Old school bullshit, machismo of like, it's a kitchen. You know, like,
but he also says
football,
sorry,
can I just say this? Football clubs people don't speak to each other like that in footy clubs anymore. So to be like, oh, it's a kitchen, like, it just, I don't like that at
all. But like, if someone fucks up the lamb rack and he's like, made it again. And then when they bring it back, he goes, Caitlin, look at me. Good job. Like, because they've redone it and it's good, you know? Look at me. Good job. Well done. That's perfect.
Insane.
Well, it makes for good TV. Otherwise, the show wouldn't be there.
I'm just saying, I manage people. You don't manage people.
What are you
like
watching?
I have been burning through. So I watched the first 4 episodes of Dexter New Blood and enjoyed it and then just stopped for no reason. And this week, I've had a bit of extra time on my hands because I got a new job, which I start tomorrow. So I essentially had a week of nothing. You know what I mean? Where it was like I could have a week off. Like, I didn't have to look for other jobs. I didn't have to stress about money. I didn't have to stress about like wasting time or anything.
Yay!
So I've been burning through Dexter New Blood. And like I know there seems to be some revisionist stuff going on with Dexter of like it was never really that good. It was never that great a show. It is like just super – the team that make the show – know how to make good episodic TV that keeps you coming back. I think New Blood's really good. We'll see how they stick the landing because I haven't got to the end of the season. I've only got a couple of episodes left. I think it's a natural progression to go from, like, to see where Dexter is now and to throw Harrison, his son, into the mix to, like, completely fuck things up, and Harrison also has a dark passenger. You know, and like Dexter and Harrison are like,
because Dexter
circling each other and stuff, and
they were the same babies, which is amazing. One they were found
in they both had the same thing happen where like they saw their mum get murdered in front of them.
Yeah,
but I was just going to say this show in comparison to the show that we did last week, Death and Other Details, there is 1, 2, 3, 4. There's at least 4 main stories going on in Dexter New Blood, and they're all interweaving, and each character interweaves into each other's story. It's actually really well written. Every show ends on a cliffhanger. Dexter's constantly getting into situations, and this is what I loved about the old show. He's constantly getting into situations where you're like, how the fuck is he going to get out of this? He always manages to get out of it. It's always somewhat plausible. It's never always 100% like, oh, yeah, that's 100% clean, but whatever, you know. It's just fun. It's like a fun, pulpy beach read, you know. And I just really enjoyed being able to, like, kick back and relax and do that this week while it was the perfect show to watch where, like, you didn't have to put maximal investment in it. I just think it's really good. I hope there's more. I hope Michael C. Hall does more with Dexter. I don't know how the season ends. Maybe Dexter gets killed off and that's the end of it, which would also be fine as well because you can probably just leave it as well. But
perfect palate cleansing after the movie we watched this week.
But anyway, if you haven't watched Dexter New Blood and you're thinking about giving it a chance, I would. It's really well shot. It's shot up in Alaska. It's really beautiful. The scenery is quite spooky as well because it's like everything's so fucking remote.
It's so cold and remote.
Yeah. The big bad, like the other serial killer, is a really interesting character as well.
There's another serial killer.
Yeah. There always is in every episode.
Oh my God. I'm again.
Yeah. And he's like the big man he's like the big man in the town, in the small town that Dexter is living in. He has renamed himself Jim. He's got a girlfriend. The girlfriend's the chief of police. So everything's perfect for Dexter. And then Harrison shows up. The big guy on campus's son gets murdered by Dexter, but it's kind of an accident, sort of. Like, he doesn't purposely go out of his way to kill this guy's son. And then that's obviously the disruption in Dexter's life, and then all hell fucking breaks loose. And
Minos Dominos!
Yeah, but I really like Michael C. Hall, even though there's times where I'm like, I don't know if he's a great... Is he a great actor? Sometimes I feel like he's a great actor. Intense. Sometimes I feel like he's an excellent actor, and then there's other times where I'm like, I don't know if this guy's very good at all. But anyway, Dexter Newblood, really good. And the kid who plays Harrison is also excellent as well. And always nice to have annoying Deborah, the sister. She's in this as well as a ghost.
It's like the dad used to be.
Yeah, like she shows up in his head, so she's constantly talking to him all the time. And I forgot after 10 years or so how annoying Deborah is. So it's nice to have Deborah back in my life, annoying the shit out of me. But, yeah, we watched Poor Things.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, you really wanted me to watch this.
I just wanted to know what you thought, because it's very, very fucking intense, this movie.
I thought it was fun.
Really?
No, I thought it was – I loved it. I loved this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought this is everything at this stage in my life. When I sit down to watch something, this is what I want. I want to be challenged somewhat. I want to laugh. I want to be intrigued. I want to see beautiful things. I want to have an interesting story and plot line in a film. I want the director and writers to be taking chances and making swings. Especially when I watch so much fucking Disney content and Marvel content, and it's so boring and contrived. You know, like, you see Mark Ruffalo in this film, you're like, oh, Jesus, you're really good.
He's excellent.
You know what I mean? Like,
I really feel like
you're
a
really talented actor.
He was really pompous and unlikable. Excellent, I thought Ruffalo was. I've never really seen him in a role like this.
And you just don't, you know, for the last 15 years, I've been seeing him in every second Marvel property. And, like, yeah, he is fine, but you don't get to see him do anything because he's in a fucking Marvel film. Like, those people don't get to act. I thought Emma Stone was stupendous, and I haven't seen all the other films, so, like, I can't say whether she deserved the Oscar, but, like, it felt like after I watched the film, like, I can understand why she won the Academy Award.
Yeah, because she's fucking naked for half of it and getting railed. But also, it's a very unflattering role. I mean, I think it's hard. Listen, the director, are you sighing at me right now?
No.
Okay, all right. The director, I can never say his name, Yorgos Lanthimos, he's Greek. He did The Lobster, which, oh man, if you haven't seen, Lobster yet. Lobster is one of those films where I am just absolutely perplexed by it. It's confusing, but, like, yeah, and that's another film I know you haven't seen, which you should definitely. Just because I've never seen a film like it where it's set in this dystopian future where everyone has to have a mate, and if you don't have a partner, you get turned into an animal. So you have to choose the kind of animal you want to be. Mm. So basically you get thrusted into this kind of retreat where you have to find your match, but you can't just, like, go, yeah, we're a couple now. You have to have something hideously in common to make sure that you can stay together. And it's like you can't go shopping. You have to have papers to say you were something. Like, it's very slow, and it's like the first film that Colin Farrell did where you're like, oh, I respect him.
Yeah.
Like, he stepped away from the mainstream Hollywood and went, this is a weird, and, like, Rachel Weisz. Anyway, and The Favourite he did. Anyway, I thought this film was great. I thought it was really great. Just some of the stuff, like the kind of Frankenstein monster storyline, and the guy. So, the guy who played her, I don't know, what do you call it? Like, ends up, I don't know, eventually being her husband, I guess. But was the assistant to William Dafoe. So yeah. William Dafoe is kind of like this Frankenstein guy who creates Bella Baxter.
Yeah, he's a Victorian doctor, but it like and all like this sort of happened in Victorian times where he's like I mean, he kind of is a nice guy, which is sort of weird because, like, he turns out to be a nice guy, but he's also this monster.
But he's, like, dying. Max, the medical student Max. So that's played by Remy. What's his name? Remy Youssef, who's a comedian, which is, like, incredible, you know? Right. That, yeah, like, he has this, like, and he's, like, this really beautiful role of, like, he studies Bella because she's this kind of, like, Frankenstein and...
So Bella commits suicide at the beginning of the film and then Willem Dafoe finds her. She's pregnant with a baby. Because he's this weird sort of Victorian doctor, just cuts things open and, like, puts things together and you see, like, a dog body with a goose head on it and stuff like that walking around his house. So it immediately is, like, in a very stylized world. But he essentially... saves her by taking her baby out of her belly and taking the baby's brain stem and attaching it to the mum's brain, base of the brain, and then sort of like literally brings it alive like Frankenstein, you know, like with like...
Yeah, so she's like got an infant brain but with that old body, but...
Yeah, and then she like accelerates. She learns at a very accelerated rate. So we kind of see her over the course of like, I don't know, it feels like a year or two maybe.
Yeah, like goes from weeing herself to like going, you know, like outside, ice cream. Yeah,
learns language very quickly.
And then reads, like when she reads, she takes on everything really well and her language is really improved. And
but that also means that she's a child with an adult's body and she discovers her sexuality very early on.
And no repercussions and stuff.
She's constantly like masturbating and stuff and then...
Yeah.
She's going to marry Youssef the comedian and then Mark Ruffalo is the lawyer who's putting together the wedding contract and he sees Bella and is like, because obviously Emma Stone's very beautiful. So there's this beautiful woman who's like kind of...
Really sexual.
Very sexual but also isn't adult enough to be able to... I mean, she wants to have sex because she's like, I want you to touch my... You know, I want you to touch
me. Jump up and down.
Yeah, so she's like... consenting in this stuff, but it is...
So that kind of element, I think, is where a lot of people kind of were hoo-haring with this film because it's like this infant mind, infant mind kind of, you know, being highly sexual. But I don't feel like the film glorified it. I felt like it was just a very interesting sort of avenue because you've got this guy now who's... But he's also... This guy's taking advantage of not just but her, but he's just a real crumb of a human who will take advantage of any situation, you know. And then as she grows rapidly, her language is so great because some of the things that she says to him, like it's quite funny, this film. Like some of the things she says to him where funny. She's like, you know, where they're in like a bad state where they've got nowhere to live and stuff like that. And she has money, but she never told him because she just never, because there's no, she's missing a lot of empathy and that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
And he's like, you had money this whole time? And she's like, but yes, I did. He's like, why didn't you say anything? She's like, well, I wanted to give you a chance to rise for the occasion and provide for both of us. And as now I've been shown that you are not worthy and have no ability to, you know, live on your own. Like it just smashes him.
Yeah.
And then it's this Victorian film where they sneak in words where, like, he'll go, cunt! I was like, he's dying of fucking cancer, you asshole. But in this Victorian language, that intertwined with that and really there were some scenes in it that I, like, felt very confronted by, but not in a prude way, but more in a, fuck, that was wild to watch on scene, or like on screen. Like there was some, she ends up working in a whorehouse, or I guess I say whorehouse because that's the term of the time, but she ends up being a sex worker and she's childlike still, but it being a sex worker kind of like chews away at her happiness. Like she doesn't find happiness there, but then finds happiness in friendship. And there's so many themes in this film that I can't tackle all of them.
It's too... it goes for 2.5 hours, but it doesn't feel like that.
No.
There's so many different ideas touched upon in this film about misogyny and feminism and sexuality.
Class
and,
systems.
Class and money and capitalism and art and living life to the fullest and... family and friendship and loyalty and like there's it's a proper adult film. And if you I was just going to say, and I'm not trying to be a dickhead about things, but ultimately it's my belief that the a piece of art is there as a piece of art, and it's up to you to get out of it what you want to get out of it. So if you want to get upset by a film, then you can get upset, or if the film makes you upset, that's okay, you know. Like, I think that's important. It's important for films and pieces of art to have to make people feel things, you know? And this film definitely does that. I just thought it was – I was just – after the first 15 minutes, I was like – I was with the film, but I'm like, okay, let's see where you're going with like a judge where I'm like, where are you going with this lawyer? You know what I mean? And then the film kind of explains itself a little bit, and I'm like, all right, I'll allow it. But like, the whole film, I was like on this ride of like, I don't know where I'm going next. And I just, after like 25 minutes, I just sort of let it wash over me, and I loved the experience. I would watch this film again. I feel like this is a film that I will watch again and again over time. You know, not every 6 months, it's not Wayne's World. but, you know, I will watch it, you know, every few years it'll come to mind. I'll watch it again. I'll see things that I didn't see the first time around. And I mean, William Dafoe is a great actor and criminally underrated, I think. And
he's so great in this.
He's amazing in this film.
Oh, great.
But Ruffalo and Stone in particular are two actors now that I have a huge amount of respect for that I may not have had previously.
She's excellent in this. This is a role where it's like, you know, that you truly have to be ugly to, like, be able to play a role like this, like, be comfortable in yourself enough. Because, like, you know, she's got this long black hair and dark eyebrows and pale skin, but also just, like yes, there's a lot of nudity, but, like, unflattering nudity. And I don't know how you pretend to have sex with someone. Like there was one scene where she has to have, you know, she's working in this brothel and she has to have sex with this man, and he starts just taking like a lot of penis, which I appreciate, because if you're going to see a lot of vagina, I want to see penis too. Make it equal. And this, you know, really kind of large, sweaty man just takes his clothes off, and they're just standing there, and she goes, "Do you smell that?" And it's obviously that this guy stinks, and she still has sex with him because she's working in a brothel now. And but just having that line, like, "Do you smell that?" Like, she didn't understand that it was him, and he's just like this disgusting man. I really felt for her. Like, I felt like, oh, gross. And then as soon as he left, another sex worker came in and gave her a handkerchief that was filled with lavender and was like, "Yeah, we know that man. Put this under your nose." And she's like, "Oh, thank you," you know. And then this, like, beautiful friendship kind of evolves of, like, women taking care of women. And, yeah, there was – they really played that her being working in the brothel, they really played it where I felt if she felt good, like, there was like, it was her choice. She wanted to be there. And I felt like that they really showed that part of it really well, that she wasn't in a position where this wasn't someone who was like, "I don't want to be here. I'm here against my will." Like, she genuinely was like, "Okay." And tried to, like, pretty herself up to be chosen and that kind of stuff, and was like, "All right, I guess we do this now." And, you know, so, but, oh man, it was pretty incredible, I have to say.
There's a
it
conversation really between
I'm speechless by this film a bit.
There's a conversation between Emma Stone and the madam of the brothel where, like, a few things happen that Emma Stone's like, "Oh, I don't understand," and this and that, and blah, blah, and because she essentially says to one of the customers, like, "Wouldn't you want to sleep with one of the girls who chooses you?" Because he chooses her and she doesn't want to sleep with him because he's ugly. And then essentially the madam of the house says, like, the only way to be able to experience the beautiful things in life is to experience, I'm paraphrasing here, but is to experience the ugly things in life as well. You know, the pain and the disdain and all that kind of thing. Because if you don't experience that, then you're nothing more than a pampered child. And, like, that's pretty much the line. And I was like, oh, that's the mission statement of this film. Like, that's what the director and writer are trying to get across here. I mean, it's an adapted film from a book. The guy who wrote the screenplay for this is an Australian guy. He wrote Doctor Doctor. Remember Doctor Doctor? Remember Ed Catterley and Tony Martin would constantly reference Doctor Doctor. It was
Born in Kilmore.
Yeah. It was like a
Tony McNamara.
I never watched it, so I don't know how good or bad it was. But
because he did The Favourite as well. So obviously he's got a good relationship with this director now.
Yeah, but prior to that he was writing like Water Rats and Doctor.
There's hope for all of us.
Yeah.
He also did Cruella, which was great. When I saw Emma Stone in Cruella, I was like, oh, she's fucking incredible, this chick. You know what you're just saying about the that line that the madam said,
mm-hmm.
be a pampered child? It's interesting you said that because at the beginning of the film, William Dafoe, like, he wants to keep her. And there's nothing sexual there. He's protecting her. He's always like, you can't leave. You have to stay here. You know, like, he goes, don't go outside. And she's like, well, why don't you go outside? And because he's, like, deformed in the face, he's like, because people don't like my face. But your face is beautiful. Like, she's so childlike. But he protects her so much. But the more she reads and interacts, she's becoming more and more intelligent and she's craving knowledge on the outside. And he has to let her go because he's never going to hold her against her will. So that's why she leaves with Duncan Featherburn. Featherbottom, whatever his name is.
Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo. But that's the thing when you were saying otherwise you're a pampered child, because I guess that William Dafoe's character was like, oh, I have to let her go because she is craving outside, but outside can be bad but can be good, so I guess she does have to experience all of it.
Yeah.
That makes more sense, yeah.
And also I think he also realised that, like, she was going to go no matter what,
yeah.
So it's that parental thing of like, well, she might as well go with my blessing so I know that if something goes wrong she can come back here, you know. It's such a weird film. It does this amazing trick on you of like at the end of the film, like you care about William Dafoe and even like Yusuf, who's like involved in all these horrible experiments and stuff. When Emma Stone goes off to travel the world, they do the same experiment again to another girl who's like just around the house. Like, these are not good actions, but somehow by the end of the film, like, you're on board with everybody and like everybody and, like, well, I was anyway. I wasn't like, oh, this is the best character ever but you don't hate them. Like, you kind of get – you understand where everybody's coming from in this insane, over-the-top world, you
know? Yeah, I'm pretty speechless with some of the stuff because I just found it was such an interesting film. And then, you know, when she meets the two people on the boat who are real, like, philosophical and they help her become even smarter. But her language is so good, you know, like.
And, like, the way that she burns the cynic, like, the black guy is constantly shitting on everything and then eventually she's like, oh, I see who you are now. You're a scared little boy. And I love that. Yeah. I love that because it's like there's so many people that I've met over the years who, especially in the arts world and stuff, that you meet, that, and like their entire personality is based on not liking anything. You know what I mean? Everything's dumb. I don't like that. You shouldn't like this. That's dumb. Everything's uncool. And it's, you feel that way about those people. And like for Emma Stone in that moment to just be like, oh, yeah, I see who you are. You're a scared little boy.
Yeah,
you
know? I'd love
her. There is this amazing thing of like her childlikeness opening the door to honest and open dialogue.
Pointing
people out is great because it points certain people out in society, but not in a like accusatory way of just like, oh, that's who you are.
Yeah, almost autistic. Like, but like when she slams Duncan.
At the beginning of the film, I thought it was like, oh, this is an allegory for autism.
No, but it's not. It's not. When she slams Mark Ruffalo, which is like, you know, I gave you a chance to rise and become a man, and I see that you are capable of neither rising, being a man or a person. Like when she slams him for being useless, because that's what he is, fucking useless.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I just love her language of, with, yeah, I love, I oh, man, so I can't even talk about it. Man, yeah, this film, she was incredible in this film, man. She totally deserved the Oscar, 100%.
Yeah. Well, we both liked
it. She's in every scene, man. Like, yeah. She's just, and she's, there's no, like, and she's funny in it. Like, to do this role that is very, like, all the things that we've already talked about, and she's funny. Yeah. There's certain, like, there's one scene where she just goes back into the room with Duncan, and she just, like, she's always wearing these, like, weird shorts, like Victorian shorts with a big, like the costuming in this movie is incredible. Mm. Big puffy sleeves and these like Victorian shoes with shorts. It's so great. Like she's not a complete human and she doesn't dress completely. I love it. And she just walks in and just like drops her pants, revealing like full bush, going, I think we should jump up and down now. And it's adorable and but funny. Like just they're having a serious moment of like, and she's just like, shut up. I don't want to hear you talk. I want to bump uglies. And it's just funny. It's just, they're like, I understand what people's concerns with the film, but I actually didn't feel like it glorified, anything at all. I felt like it was a very,
I think you've completely missed the point if you think, like,
yeah,
I think that says,
it was really interesting.
At the risk of sounding really harsh, I think it says more about you.
Yeah.
If you're like, oh my God, he's having sex with a child. Like, well.
But she's not. She's accelerating, she's not a child. She's emotionally different from people.
But
and
also,
she's not,
it's a film. So, like,
because she's not a bad person.
Relax.
She's not taking advantage of people.
It's not the real world. It's a piece of art. You're meant to just take it in and think about it. It's not actually happening. None of this is real. It's not real. A film is real, guys. You know,
like
just relax.
When William Dafoe's character burps, an actual bubble comes out of his mouth. It's amazing. So, the guy who wrote it.
He has no gastric juices. He's dead. At first, I was like, oh, God. And, like, the runner of, like, all the shit that William Dafoe's dad did to him. Mm. Like, and even when Emma Stone comes back when William Dafoe's got cancer and he's still talking about the shit that his dad did to him. Like, there's still, you know, other things that his dad did to him. But he still kind of talks about his dad almost fondly in a way. It's like, my dad was a monster. And he always, you know, like, it's a bizarre. Oh, and you know what? It's like an easy way to describe these films because you don't want to come across as being like, yeah, I get it and I love it because you don't want to be labeled as a freak or whatever.
I felt
within 15 minutes of watching this film, I felt super comfortable. I felt like I got everything that the film was trying to say. I loved everything that the film was trying to say. I loved how it was being said. Through set direction, set design, like the costumes, the acting, the direction. If you're going to sit down and watch television anytime in the next little bit when this is available, like, because it's on Amazon Prime?
Disney, it's on Disney.
Disney Plus. If you're going to, like, you know, if you're going to sit down and be like, oh, I'll just watch some Maths, watch this instead.
No, I think people that love Maths aren't going to
watch
get this.
Well, I'm using that as an example of something shit. Just watch Poor Things instead. I promise you, give it 20 minutes and you'll end up watching the whole thing and it's such a beautiful piece of art. You'll be thinking about it for days afterwards. Mm. It's and it'll stay with you. It's one of those films that'll stay with you, and I can't wait to see what everybody involved in it does next. And
I mean, he's just great, that director, but also this. What? Well, I thought you were sighing at me.
No, I'm looking at the.
Oh, I thought you were sighing. He wrote an episode of All Together Now.
Yeah, that's his first credit, right?
Yeah,
the writer. Yeah. So he's gone from All Together Now to being Academy. Was the screenplay nominated for an Academy Award? I think it might have been.
It was 100% nominated, yeah. Well, he was nominated for Best Screenplay because he did The Favourite as well. So nominated Best Original Screenplay for The Favourite. And then, and also he did The Great, You know, the TV show The Great, he's done that. He wrote that one as well, so nominated for Emmys. Best Adapted nomination for Poor Things. But so he did All Together Now, Big Sky, Love My Way. Love My Way is excellent.
You know what else he wrote?
What?
Doctor.
I don't know that. Echo Beach. He did Echo Beach as well. I don't know Echo Beach. Single Life of Us. Echo
Beach.
What's Tangle? Is that another Australian drama? Okay, so whatever Tangled is, he did Tangle. Oh, and he did Offspring as well. He did an episode, wrote an episode of Offspring. Spirited, mate. All these bloody, like, Australian TV shows, they're all the same.
My friend Lawrence was on Offspring.
Yeah, he was. Maybe he wrote that episode. Maybe he did. All right. Did. How many grumps?
5.
Really?
Yep.
I knew you'd like this film. I lie. You were either going to go, no, it was blah, 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 crap because of this, and you would have been like 10 minutes in, something would have set you off and made you turn it off and not want to watch it, or you were going to be just fucking jerking off to the wank fest that is a brilliant piece of art. And you did the latter. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry that I like good art. Yeah, so 5 grumps.
Do I want to give it 5 grumps? I feel like it, yeah, like the... I gave Jury Duty 5 grumps.
Well, then this definitely deserves 5 grumps.
No, because I think that my issue is that because Jury Duty filled my heart so well, like I was so purely just filled with love from that's what I had to give 5. I'm not filled with love from this film. I'm filled with confusion and it's complexities and it's made me use my brain a lot, so I'm filled with a curiosity more than I am the other thing, but I actually can't, there's nothing about it. Like, they even had Charlie from Girls in it, plays the husband who she's trying to get away from. It's Charlie, and he's a Brooklyn an American actor, and I had to look it up. I was like, fuck man, that's him. And he has this British accent and he's acting. I'm like, oh, brilliant. Could not tell it was him.
Brilliant.
Everyone in this film was A+. Jared Carmichael is also a stand-up comedian who played the black guy on the boat. He's a big comedian. I'm like, I actually can't fault this film, man.
Let's grump it up, dude.
I'm grumping it up to 5. I got to.
Grump it up.
Can't fault it. Because even sometimes there's someone in it where I'm like, oh, I hate this guy because he's a fucking, you know, he's a bloody problematic piece of
probably
garbage.
Probably a Nepo baby.
Dude.
Jump out of your chair.
There's
like,
no Nepo babies.
A Nepo baby.
There's no Nepo babies.
What do you think of Carrie Fisher? Ooh, here we go.
Carrie Fisher.
Feminist icon, but also a Nepo baby.
Yeah, but also she had a rough childhood.
Oh, well, that's okay then.
Yeah.
Okay.
But she wasn't like, she had a really rough childhood.
Yeah.
Postcards Over the Edge. Have you ever seen that?
Uh-huh. I have seen it. Yeah. That's why I'm asking you.
All right. 5 grumps. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Appreciate it. I'm hungry. I got to walk gym.
It's like a town hall meeting. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Thank you all for your questions. Hey, I know I say this every week. Our listenership has gone way up this week. I don't know what's happening. Something's happening with the Spotify algorithm. More people listening. Thank you so much.
Tell your friends.
Tell your fucking friends. And remember, tonight is ladies' night at the Prince Bend Hotel and Ballroom.
Because it's ladies' night.
That's from the Blues Brothers. Right. You two girls. Anyway, so I'm just going to do like Blues Brothers random lines now. Hey, you sleaze, my bed.
Well, we love you very much.
We love you guys so much. Tell your friends. Hey, our review, the score on Spotify is 5 stars.
Yay!
So thank you guys. On Apple, it's gone up to 4.5 as well. So
please don't give us.
We thank you guys. Well, we had one bad review. Completely fucks us. But anyway.
Well, the only reason why the bad review was there, it was not because anyone listened to it. It was someone from my past playing fucking funny buggers.
Yeah, well, fuck off, dickhead. Anyway, thank you. Keep it up. Yeah. Tell more people. We want to get famous.
Yeah. we just don't want to have day jobs anymore.
Yeah, we really don't want to do day jobs. I haven't even started my new day job and I don't want it anymore.
Dogs. Adopt dogs. Foster dogs.
No, I'm very happy with my current employer. Thank you. And we'll be back next week with something
Thanks
else.
Thanks for listening. I love you.
Love you.